Hello, this is Damien Wild, editor of EG. I'm here with Guy Granger and Chris Island, respectively the chief executives for JLL Europe, Middle East and Africa, and for JLL here in the UK. It's 12 months since both of them took on their new roles, and what an extraordinary year it's been, bookended by the EU referendum and a general election, whose outcome is still less than certain. Both have had dramatic consequences, for sure, and I'm not sure it was much quieter in between either. But, and this is a big but, there has been more activity in the UK than many expected. Sterling's weakness has drawn overseas interest, and infrastructure investment has supported the long-term fundamentals of many UK cities. We'll be talking about the market, about disruption, and about JLL itself, the comings, goings, M&A, shareholder controversy over pay, and their ambition for the business. So, Chris, if I can start with you. That UK resilience that your CEO, Christian Ulbrich, talked about in his most recent results announcement, he said it had surprised him. Has it surprised you as well?
I think it probably was a surprise in the immediate aftermath of the referendum, when there was quite a lot of volatility in all the markets, and there was definitely a period of 4 to 6 weeks of quite significant uncertainty. But in fact, since then, UK property values have regained everything that they lost, and so in the first 6 months of this year, our transactional teams, and that's both investment and on the occupier side, are definitely more active, and we are doing more business, and you know, the market is holding up very well.
That's the investment side, the leasing side as well?
It's both. I mean, our tenant rep teams in London were telling me last week that they've never been busier. So that's in London. So there is a lot of activity, and I think what we've also seen, and partly the point you were making, Damien, about the repricing of sterling, a lot of overseas investors are now very focused on the UK, and we're seeing some very high profile deals being done, especially in London, on prime assets. And if anything, the pricing has got stronger on those assets, but generally across the UK, it's holding up pretty well.
And Guy, is that the appetite and the view outside of the UK as well about opportunities in the UK?
Yeah, it is, but it does depend who you talk to. I mean, there are some investors out there that have been spooked by the referendum vote, more just from a cultural point of view. They didn't expect it of the British to sever themselves from the other nations in Europe. So what does that mean going forward? So some people have withdrawn, but I think they've been replaced by others who see the opportunity with the exchange rate change.
Yeah.
So there's been ebbs and flows. But I think the resilience comes from the fact that there is a lot of capital out there, and actually there's more and more capital going into real estate. Generally, I mean, this is a global trend. This isn't a UK, European thing. Where do you get your return on investment if you want to invest your capital? And how do you diversify if you're a pension fund? What it means is real estate is becoming more and more attractive, partly because low interest rates, available debt, lack of an alternative, rather than actually the real estate fundamentals driving it. And as a result, actually, you know, people are really interested in real estate generally. So the UK is benefiting from that because it's one of the most transparent markets in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the other reasons for the focus on real estate in a low interest rate or negative interest rate environment in many different areas. I mean, real estate does provide a sustainable and strong an acceptable income stream, and you know, a lot of investors are focused on that income.
Okay, and Guy, you suggested there was some bemusement amongst continental Europeans that we've chosen to sever ourselves. Has that affected their investment decisions? Is that inward investment coming more from Asia than it is from Europe, perhaps, than previously?
No, not necessarily. I think German investors are quite interested generally, actually, as kind of a bit of a currency hedge and also a hedge against the political situation in Europe. So it's not just Asian investors. I know we've seen a lot of Hong Kong money come into London specifically, but I'd say when you look at the UK as a whole, I think it's still quite a good blend of different investors out there. I mean, the bemusement has come probably from some business leaders, I would say, when you're looking at that, you know, making decisions about future occupation or future choices of location about where you put your business. That's become a lot harder. And without a doubt, that's led to some delays in decision making. What will play out, I think, is how cities respond to it, not just countries, but how cities respond to it. And this is where actually things like the employment law, the legal system, do still play in the favour of the UK versus markets like Germany and France.
Okay, and Chris, you talked about the tenant rep teams being busy. Mm-hmm. Is that just in London? Are they as busy in other parts of the country?
I mean, I think in the main regional centres at the moment, on the occupational side, generally the feedback that we're getting is pretty strong. So it's holding, it's holding up well. And certain areas where you've got some strategic advantages are still going really well, and if anything, are expanding. So if we look at the logistics market, if we look at industrial, which is perhaps focusing a little bit more on, you know, last mile distribution and things like that, with the structural change around retailing. I mean, those are still very definitely growth areas. So we will be recruiting in those areas.
Okay, and looking at JLL itself and that service mix, you acquired Integral, the property maintenance business. And I just wonder whether that heralds an even bigger move into FM Guy, whether it'll be by acquisition, whether it'll be by via organic growth.
Well, it's interesting when you look at our business, because in the Americas, 70% of our business revolves around providing advice to occupiers, whether that's running the buildings and advising them on location strategy and the workplace design. Whereas in Europe, 70% of our business is around investors. So what we're trying to do is invest into our Americas business around the investor business, capital markets and other areas of business. And in Europe, our strategy has been to build our occupier business. Because actually we think getting that intelligence of how buildings are run for occupiers and the choices that occupiers make about where they go and what type of building they go will be absolutely critical to investors making the right decisions going forward.
And so what's the ambition there, 50-50?
Yeah, it would be going forward. I mean, that's a long-term goal across our European business. And there's room for growth in that occupier business. At the moment, occupiers outsource about 20% of their work. We've got a decent market share of that. But the trend that we're seeing is that occupiers are outsourcing more and more work. And a big driver for this is actually, can we run our buildings efficiently, please? And an outsource provider like us can try and do that. So the engineering services company that we bought, Integral, have great coverage across the UK. And it's a critical part of a lot of people's businesses. You know, run my building for me. Make sure that the air conditioning, the lighting is run in the most efficient, energy efficient way for cost. But actually, more and more, give our people a really good human experience. So yes, we have got an investment plan around that to provide an end-to-end service for occupiers that we can then link and draw that insight and play it back into the investor world.
And we've seen FM very much in the spotlight recently. The situation BA found themselves in, you know, an external provider, CBRE in that case, so the reasons aren't clear yet. But does that heighten your appetite, the sense that corporates are very much more reliant on outsourced providers, or does that give you pause for thought and perhaps introduce a bit of caution?
Well, I think it's there's a lot more health and safety and caution around those types of business because they do come with risk. But any facilities manager, actually, the reason it's of interest to people like us to go into that area is it's a critical part of the way businesses run. So when businesses outsource, they usually put FM at the very center of it and attach other services to it, which is very unlike the investor world, I'd say. So it's often a critical part Now, I'd say for one of our clients, Amazon, we play a critical role for them in their supply chain. So everyone will know that actually once you order something off Amazon, actually it only takes Amazon 20 minutes from the click when you pay to find the product in the warehouse, if it's one of theirs, to package it up and to get it into a delivery van or onto a train. 20 minutes it takes. And a big part of that is the technology that they've got in their logistics warehouses, the robots that they use. And we manage a lot of those warehouses. We repair the robots. We are now, they list us as a critical part of their supply chain. So when you order something, actually JLL are involved in getting that into the delivery. So as a result, we are critical to Amazon. But yeah, that comes with a risk, and we have a massive responsibility to perform. But as you also become a real strategic partner for them.
Okay, and Chris, growth through acquisition or growth organically?
I mean, certainly in terms of the UK business and the UK strategy at the moment, we are focused on organic growth, and we're focused on doing what we do better, more efficiently, harnessing data.
Sounds like you're ruling out acquisition.
I am not focused on acquisitions to grow the UK business at the moment. And Guy can give a wider company perspective on that. But I think in terms of what we're focused on, we've got huge opportunity within the UK business. There are some areas we were just talking about, the occupier, the occupier piece. So generally, I think we've got a lot to go for there. We've just won 4 very big property and asset management contracts. So there's a lot for us to go there in terms of organic growth. And as I said earlier on, the transactional markets are picking up. We're doing more business there, and getting the whole business focused and getting the business talking to each other, making sure that we're fully aligned with what our clients are looking for and giving them holistic solutions across expertise lines and across specialities. That's really what we're focused on, and that is very exciting.
And Guy, is the UK an exception in not seeking growth through acquisition, or is that the JLL house view now?
I wouldn't say it was the house view, because we're always on the lookout for acquisition opportunities. We've got the ability to be able to do that. And it has been a huge way of our expansion over the last 10 years. We concentrate on both is the answer. I'd say as we focus a lot more on technology and digital strategy, acquisition will play a big part there. We've already acquired quite a few businesses in that space because we recognize that we're not going to do it all ourselves. We haven't got the right DNA for that. And also in that occupier space, I'd say in Europe, that's an area we're definitely looking at. I think there's more change going on in the workplace environment than has ever happened before, which as a result does require a slightly different skill, and we think that we can go up the value chain if we buy into that.
Okay, and how about tech? Prop tech has been, you know, the strongly emerging theme of the last 18 months, certainly the last 12 months. Where are you active there? You know, others have had perhaps more attention, maybe undeserved, but where are you active? And again, is there an ambition to grow there through acquisition, if that's the focus?
Yeah, there definitely is. And I don't think it's through one way. I think it'll be through investments like a VC approach, acquisition, also by recruiting a new skill set. So I think any big business that has the ability to invest like us will be investing a lot in technology and digital, because you know, I've got no doubt, I probably look down the road a bit further than most people in our business because it's my responsibility to do so. The world is changing so fast, and real estate at the moment hasn't caught up, but there's no doubt we'll be caught napping at some stage by technology and innovation that will provide a customer solution that we haven't thought of. So I am convinced that the next 5 years in this industry, we will see considerable change. And that change will come in many forms, but a lot of it will come through technology or just a new way of working. And so we have to have access to that world. Now, we've recently partnered up with Seedcamp, And Seedcamp, one of the best sort of enterprises for accelerating prop tech companies and tech companies generally. But they're specifically focusing on prop tech with a new venture called Concrete, where the investment partner is Starwood. And we come in as their strategic partner. And that is really for us to learn, to get access to new companies, to assess them, and to really sort of be a sponge and take all that expertise that Seedcamp have got and Starwood from investing into it, so that actually we can gain the knowledge to make the right calls going forward. It's really exciting, and I'm personally very involved in that because I think that you need to lead on the top with from the top with technology.
Okay, you said big changes over the next 5 years. Do you want to make some big, bold predictions now?
Well, I think what we've seen from other markets is actually that the customer journey is the thing that's been disrupted. Technology has made it easier for people to get from A to B, most definitely in the transactional world, or perhaps looking for property. So, you know, we're a property agent. People used to come to us to find the available property. We can see from the residential world, actually, that things have changed there. So you need to find a new role, a new purpose. I think the transactional world could get disrupted, will get disrupted at some stage. Question is it in the next 2 years or 10 years? But more importantly, and much more fundamental than that, rather than just looking at how agents will be affected, I think the whole lease environment will get disrupted. And that actually turns everything on its head in terms of real estate being an investable opportunity. So this flexibility that's coming through is very real, and it's not a problem for real estate as long as you accept it's coming and you adjust your way of working to deal with it. And that's what we intend to do.
And the disruption to the lease is a significant shortening.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would have thought so, but I think the trend for flexible working in particular, we've estimated that in the next 10 years, 30% of the office stock will be flexible working, and that is anything from renting it from an hour, never mind a day or a week. So that is true flexibility. But behind that are incredibly good models, which are very investable. So it's just a different way of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could draw a comparison there over the last 5 to 10 years, let's say, in the student housing world. So to start with, unless you had a long lease to a university or a minimum a nomination agreement for 20 years, the institutional investment world wasn't really interested in student housing deals, and it was PE providers that came in and provided the funding to get those platforms up and running. But now, as people understand that sector, now direct student lets, so you've never got, at any stage in a year, you've never got more than 9 months of secure income, and for quite a lot of the year, you've got less than that, and that's now acceptable, and it's investable, and you've got big sovereigns heavily into those sectors, and you've got the big institutions. So I think the investors are quite flexible. I mean, I think what a lot of the research that we've done in terms of workplace, as Guy was saying, is that occupiers having 100% of their real estate in longer leases is changing, and we're going to end up with 30 or 40%, which is much more flexible. So the market will adapt to that. Those longer leases will become more valuable the moment there are less of them, because a lot of investors are seeking long-term annuity-style income streams. But there will also be investors that really capitalise and understand the flexible working approach, and will also do very well from that.
I think that's a really good example, that student housing, right? You think short leases, you think risk. But, I mean, student housing is one of the hottest markets out there at the moment,
yeah,
with these great operators that are driving really, really efficient models. It's very, very investable.
No, and I mean, just while we're on that, because I think one of the other themes that we're seeing, and it's probably, I think certainly in the student housing space, I mean, the UK has led the way.
Yeah.
In terms of Europe, and in a number of the other alternative sectors, I mean, a lot of the EBITDA-driven businesses, people and a lot of the institutions are now much more willing to try and understand the drivers behind the business, and accept, do their DD and their underwrite on the underlying business model and actually accept that, a lease is no longer necessary. So that's one of the biggest growth areas, those alternative areas. So whether it's self-storage, it's data centers, it's senior living. I mean, student housing is almost, almost one of the core sectors now in terms of, activity within the sector. So it's an exciting time.
So the real estate world is changing. Your world may be changing as well, with the likes of Rohan Silver and his company Hubble. David Cameron's former tech advisor, of course, he says that artificial intelligence is coming for your jobs, for agent jobs. Guy, do you buy into that, and how impactful do you think it could be?
Well, I think artificial intelligence is real. We've done a joint venture with a company called Leviton, which uses artificial intelligence and machines to read leases, right? I mean, when I was a graduate, that's all I did was read leases. But now machines can do it. I mean, we need people to check them as well, but it's a far more efficient way of doing it. So when we're acting for a corporate with like 5,000 leases across the continent, we can do it very, very quickly, very cheaply, using artificial intelligence. So yeah, I mean, it's here. Let's not deny it. The question is, right, what impact is that going to have on jobs? Well, you have a responsibility then to try and reteach people, relearn, re-educate, and upskill people so you can use them in different ways. But if as an employer you don't do that, then it will affect jobs. So yeah, that's when, as a business leader, you have real choices to make in terms of how you're going to... I mean, we need to embrace artificial intelligence, otherwise we'll get left behind. But what do we do about training our people, retraining our people, so they can do something else?
And current numbers of agents in the industry, if artificial intelligence takes hold to the degree that Rohan and others predict, it'll be a smaller number that are required overall.
Well, I think in time that may well be true. But agents may be doing something slightly different as part of the process. So the question is, how long will all of this take? I think even the property industry, which isn't the quickest on a technology update, admits that at some stage these things are going to have an impact on us. I think there's some great quotes out there. We sort of overestimate how quickly it's going to happen, but underestimate over a period of time how much is going to happen. And you know, as I look down the road, certainly in 5-10 years' time, I think we'll be working in a very different way. And we're all human beings. You've got choices to make. You can choose, I'll embrace that and I'll try and relearn and do something in a different way. And perhaps I'll fail at first, but at least I'll keep trying. And that's good. That's actually exciting. You're curious. Or you can make a choice and say, no, I'm sticking to what I've got. And that's in today's world, generally, I think that's dangerous.
Okay, perhaps a very visible example of how tech is impacting things is the sheer volume of equipment we have out on the table here. There's microphones, yeah. There's a mixing desk, yeah. There's laptops, tablets everywhere. And I'll frighten you both. I interviewed you 4.5 years ago now when you took on your previous roles, actually, chairman and chief executive of the UK business. And Guy, I'll remind you, back then you talked about a 5-year business plan. You talked, certainly our headline on that piece was that JLL would be younger and more tech orientated in its look and feel. Has all of that come to pass, and is that 5-year business plan almost delivered?
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of those predictions I made. Okay, some of it has happened, but it's probably only when you look back you realize at that time when I was speaking to you, 98% of our employees in the UK were using BlackBerrys. And at the time I thought that was a really outdated way of doing things. I'm glad to say, and it's no offense to that particular company, but we don't. We've moved on. We're all on smartphones. In fact, I'd say we've tooled our people up with devices. We've trained people on them. So I think that they do approach clients and the way we do work in a very modern way. We've definitely got younger as a business. We're much more diverse than we've ever been. Unfortunately, I had a big birthday last weekend and I was giving out free ice cream to all my colleagues. And I'd say it is incredible how young our business is, how diverse it is. I heard all sorts of different languages coming through. And honestly, that's what excites me and keeps me going, because I think that these people will really influence JLL going forward in a very positive way. I think we've made great strides in terms of the digital and technology side. I mean, honestly, we can do a lot more. I'm surprised in those 5 years the business hasn't changed more. But that example I just gave about Leverton and the lease reading is a classic example where we've embraced it and we're completely changing the way we're working. So there are lots of other tools out there that are offering really neat solutions for our clients. We've invested millions and millions into organizing our data so that we can give much better insight to our clients. I mean, I would say that the occupier world is moving far faster than the investor world in this respect. And we are investing a lot of money into it. So it's not through a lack of effort or ideas. I think you will see it come through and play out over time. So, I mean, I would like to think that we're a more modern organization as a result, but I'm not the best person to judge. I'll ask our clients and our customers about that.
Okay, we'll make sure we do that. And Chris, over the last year, other changes, there's been incoming people into JLL, and there's been a lot of departures. And you know, EG has covered that over the year. And I have to say, it feels like there's been more than you might expect from a business like JLL during that period. What's the story behind it?
I mean, I think we have been focused on working differently within the business, and as I was alluding earlier on to breaking down silos within the business and joining up the offer that we're giving to clients. So there has been an element of deliberate change and a different emphasis. But having said that, Damon, you're absolutely right. I mean, quite a number of the departures that we had were not planned. And quite a lot of them were good friends and remain good friends and colleagues. What we have seen, though, is that where you've got a really strong workforce, we've got a lot of very good people, and what that has done is it has made a little bit more room for people to grow more quickly, take on more responsibility, and actually develop their careers. And as I say, I'm definitely not pretending it's planned, and you know, quite a bit of it wasn't planned. But what it has done, it's probably meant that we've been able to keep more of some of those really good people that are coming through, because they can actually now see a career path, whereas before they might have viewed it a little bit more as a glass ceiling. Most of the people that have moved on have gone niche, actually, rather than to main competitors. So there's a whole load of factors that influence, you know, each and every decision. But from where we are as a business now, and certainly in the first 6 months of this year, in those transactional businesses, we have done more than we did in the first 6 months. We've actually done more than we did in the second 6 months. Of last year, so slightly different ways of working, and that's just not just in terms of technological change, but in terms of collaborative behaviour and things like that, have enabled us to make up you know, the gap that some of those people have left.
And what do you expect to happen over the next 12 months? Are those structural changes complete? Do you expect to bring in? Do you expect to see people leave the building? Do you expect more people to come in?
Well, we have been making new hires. We have been on the acquisition trail in terms of talent, and so, you know, some people have left the business have come back, and we've made some very exciting new hires. Now, in certain parts of the business, we are actively recruiting. At the moment.
And what parts are they?
Well, in terms of the alternatives business, there are quite a few areas where we see quite a lot of scope there. We've invested quite heavily in the build to rent PRS sector, and I can see more investment going into that, and I think we were talking earlier on in terms of the occupier side of the business. So we will be focused in that space as well. So inevitably, Damien, when within the element of the UK business that I look after, we've got we've got 3,000 people. There is going to be a continual movement, and an element of movement is healthy, because getting some fresh blood, new ideas in is a good thing, and also making room for people to grow. So it won't surprise me. We will make more hires, and I'm sure some people will decide to move on and do other things.
Okay, and Guy, pay. That's been quite a topic in recent weeks, and one of your larger investors, shareholders rather, Generation Investment Management, Al Gore's business, which probably helped propel it into the headlines as well. They've objected to some of the remuneration packages of the previous business leaders. Colin Dyer is the previous CEO. What's the latest there? How are you managing the fallout from that?
Well, I think it's really important for us to listen to that. It's really interesting, I think, in a property industry that I've known for all my career in the UK, obviously mainly made up of partnerships. And actually a lot of my career, as people will know who know me, has been spent in small partnerships. And now, being on the board of a US listed company, it's a very different environment. And I think it's a really healthy environment, actually, where the top people have to declare what they're paid, and the shareholders have a say on it. I mean, it's, you know, I'm one of those people now, so it directly affects me.
And you're scrutinised.
Yeah, and you know, my pay is decided by the compensation committee, not even by my boss, like most people. So the external board of directors decide what I get paid, and that's what's happened in the past. And you know, they've come in for quite a bit of criticism from that particular shareholder. I'm pleased to say that at the AGM, the shareholders voted for the reinstatement of our chairman, Sheila Penrose, and the board of directors, and actually reiterated it with a vote of confidence to the new management and to our strategy. So I think a lot of this is historic, but there's no doubt in our culture in the UK, we're interested in this stuff, and I can understand why. So, you know, there's been a bit of chat around the business, and we have to front up to that. Colin had many, many years of great service, so it was just a moment in time that got a lot of the press. But I would say it's we've got through it, and I've got an investor day with the shareholders in a few months' time, and I'll see for myself what they've got to say for it. And you know, that's the ultimate test for me as a leader, is that I've got to create value for the shareholders.
Okay, and chat around the business. I wonder whether the chat around the business here in Warwick Street is different to the chat around the business in Chicago or in Frankfurt.
Yeah, I think different cultures react in different ways. I mean, look, people can have different opinions on it, but myself, I think wealth generation in the US is treated slightly different to the way it is here in the UK.
Do you mean we're more sceptical about it here in
Skeptical,
the UK?
Sceptical, cynical, nosy, and interested generally. I mean, we are a US business, so actually the pay levels are compared with US businesses, US listed businesses. And actually, when you put it in that context, it's very different from what we in the UK normally see. It's right that people should challenge this and talk about it, particularly in the world we live in today. I mean, we've seen by the political environment that actually, we have to be answerable to what we're paid in a listed environment. And, you know, I haven't got a problem with that.
Okay, and on politics briefly, Chris, do you worry about the year ahead and the impact that the uncertainty in the political environment may have on transaction volumes here in the UK?
At the time of this podcast, I'm not sure when it's actually going to be publicised. We're only two or three working days post the election. I did just a quick check this morning. We've had four or five investment transactions closed in the last 24 hours, and those are exchanges. So those are deals that were done beforehand. We were living with uncertainty anyway, Damien, and I think, I mean, to be honest, I think there are some positives that can come out of the election. I think IndyRef 2, for example, is probably off the agenda now. I'm talking to my colleagues in Scotland. They are energized about the thought that UK domiciled investors might well start to come back into those markets. And I think that there is a general feeling that we might have to have a Brexit outcome that's more favourable to business continuity than perhaps we would have had before. Now, I think there was a lot of uncertainty before and now in terms of how we arrive at whatever that outcome is, and I think a lot of businesses have got used to a highish level of uncertainty. So I expect in the very short term we'll find one or two people who just want to take stock and think things through. But the vast majority of the business that we've got on at the moment, we think is actually just going to go through on the plan.
Okay, and we're almost out of time. But thinking back to when we were last in a room like this four and a half years ago, Guy, you were chief exec of the UK business. Chris, you were chairman, now head of EMEA, head of the UK. What next for you both? Is it the world for you and Europe for you, Chris?
Okay, well, I'll start. I'll give you a bit of time to think about that, Chris. What's next for me? Well, at the end of this month, I'm going to celebrate my 50th and go to Ibiza with all my friends. So I'll just focus on that for a few moments because it's a nice thought. But seriously, I don't know how it's happened. I'm slightly more ambitious than I was 5 years ago, and it's good to have that sense of energy. I mean, I'm more ambitious because I think the job's got harder because of the political environment and the uncertainty. But also, I suppose I've got a bit more international experience in the last 12 months. So I can see actually that there are some brilliant ways of doing things. And sometimes the way we do things in the UK, whilst it might seem right, is not always the best way. And I think by bringing through those skills and those ways of working, actually, I really hope that I can influence this business and more than that, influence our industry. I think our industry needs to take action. Our industry needs to be a catalyst for change rather than watch it happen around us. And if I can impact on that both personally, professionally, and bring JLL through that and impact that, then really that's what I want to achieve. And yeah, I do look out over the next 3 to 5 years and just think, well, how can I bring about positive change? And it will be partly through the work we do with clients, partly what I do with JLL, but also interacting with those political changes, making sure that we as an industry actually give something back to society in terms of the built environment that we provide. I think we've got a major role to play in terms of the housing in some way like the UK. So I don't want to sound like too political myself, but I feel I've got a much bigger purpose than just actually being a property person. I'm a business leader now. I'm responsible for 10,000 people across Europe. And I take that responsibility very, very seriously. And honestly, I've sort of put myself second after that.
Okay, it started to sound like the launch of a mayoral campaign there for a moment.
I'm just wondering which party.
Well, if you want to know,
maybe it's Macron. It's a new party.
Yeah. If only. Yeah. If there's one job I would ever love to do, it's to be London mayor.
Okay.
Right, so you heard it here first.
Chris, top that. People.
Right. I'm not gonna try and top that. I'm working very hard at the moment with the senior team here on a strategy that's going to take the UK business through to 2020. I'm hugely ambitious for JLL generally, but for JLL in the UK, which is where I can exert the most influence with the senior leadership team that we've got here. We have got a great team, and you know, we've spent quite a lot of the time talking, Damien, today about different levels of uncertainty, whether it's geopolitical, whether it's political, whether there are economic bumps in the road around the Brexit thing. Where all of this, whilst all of this is going on, there are opportunities. And one of the big challenges, but also the big excitement for us, is if we're really agile and we can take advantage of those opportunities and we can be fleet of foot, we can position the business, then I think it's going to be a very exciting time. I mean, very definitely not without its challenges, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, Guy Granger, Chris Ireland, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.